The History Channel Original Podcast.
History This Week, July 2nd, 1957. I'm Sally Helm. There are 800 live lobsters on this private island on a lake in Florida. Also, about 800 baked chickens, 800 fresh pineapples, 2,000 ears of corn, and, arriving on a fleet of boats from the mainland, more than 1,000 people, all of them associated, in some way or another, with a household product that you have almost certainly heard of. Tupperware. The leader of them all is a woman named Brownie Wise. This private island, it is her private island. She's brought all of these people here for a luau as part of the fourth annual Tupperware Jubilee. Brownie has revolutionized Tupperware sales. She is a genius at selling these airtight plastic containers. And in the process, she has made a lot of people a lot of money. And she's risen very high within the company. Maybe not quite as high as the founder, Earl Tupper, but she's definitely getting close. And in the eyes of the public, at least, she's overtaken him. But tonight, on this island, things are going to take a turn. Thunderheads are gathering. The leaves of the Carolina willows are fluttering in the wind. Very shortly, the Florida sky is going to crack open, letting out a torrential rain. And Brownie, she hasn't planned for this.
She may have enough lobsters and enough pineapples, but she's gonna need more boats.
Today, the story of Tupperware and the woman who helped make its name. How did a single mom in Michigan turn a plastic container into an empire? And when exactly did it all go wrong?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's the spring of 1947, 10 years before Brownie Wise will host that island jubilee. She's a single mom raising a young boy in the suburbs of Detroit. One day, she hears a knock at the door. She opens it to find herself face-to-face with a salesman on her stoop from Stanley Home Products.
If you remember Stanley, those were kind of the dowdy home cleaning products, mops. Not anything nearly as glamorous as Tupperware.
Bob Keeling is the author of a book about Brownie.
This guy shows up and he's supposed to be giving a demonstration, but it's so fumbling and clumsy. Brownie's thinking to herself, you know, I could do better than this.
I sort of imagine her like going back and looking in her mirror and being like, here's me demonstrating this mop. Here's how I would have done it.
It really was a watershed moment, wasn't it?
Brownie starts selling Stanley products herself. And she was right. She's good. The job requires salespeople, called dealers, to go house to house pitching mops and cleaning products. Dealers with top sales numbers get perks, like fur coats. And dealers who recruit people to form a new team of dealers, they get a cut of that team's profits. It's an early form of what is now called multi-level marketing. And Brownie is making good money. Within a year, she is managing her own sales force on Detroit's West Side. She launches a newsletter, which she uses to praise her best dealers and try to prod the slackers to do better. It's called The Go-Getter.
She had a genius for communication, and she knew how to whip up these dealers. You know, maybe if you tried a little harder, maybe you could get that fur coat for yourself. or you could help send your family on that vacation.
In the summer of 1948, Brownie and some of her dealers visit the Stanley headquarters in Massachusetts. She tells the company's founder, "I want to move up the ranks here. Maybe become some kind of manager or executive?"
And basically his response to her when she talked about her ambition was, "Well, honey, you know, the front office is no place for a woman." And I remember her son, Jerry, recounting that story to me. And he remembered very clearly up there in suburban Detroit, her coming home from that trip being angry and saying these exact words, "I'll show him."
She already has the beginnings of a plan. A few months back, one of her dealers had introduced Brownie to a new product called the Wonder Bowl. It's really nothing more than a plastic container with a sealable lid, something you would find in just about any kitchen today. But in 1948, it is a breakthrough. People are storing their leftovers in bowls covered with tinfoil, or even shower caps, which didn't really keep them fresh. And the Wonder Bowl aimed to change that. The trouble was, no one knew how to use it.
"Press down the center of the seal and lift a little at one side. Hear that whisper? That's Tupperware's airtight promise to keep food's flavor fresh."
You had to know how to burp the bowl to get the air out from inside it to give it the vacuum seal.
You've probably done this so many times that you don't even notice it. But to 1948 consumers, this whole vacuum seal thing is confusing. Brownie is not convinced at first. But then, a happy accident. While she's taking a look at the product, she knocks a sealed Wonder Bowl onto the floor. It doesn't pop open. It just bounces. Brownie immediately realizes this bowl is going to change the world. And now I know just how to sell it.
It had to be a demonstration product.
A demonstration product, so that Brownie's customers could see the vacuum seal in action.
She would put liquid in the bowl, then seal it up and throw it across the room, to the horror of other people there thinking, "Oh, what if this thing spills?" But it never did.
Brownie Wise ditches Stanley and orders Wonder Bowls by the truckload. She tells her team to go all in on Tupperware, show people how it works, and most importantly, get it in front of the customers who have the most to gain. Women who, after World War II, have been pushed back into the kitchen, where their leftovers are spoiling by the second.
"Oh, come to the party, the Tupperware party. See ideas for beating the high cost of eating by locking in freshness."
The sales technique of the Tupperware party was what made Tupperware Tupperware.
Allison Clark is a design history professor and the author of a book on Tupperware. She said Brownie's real talent was in figuring out how to sell the product to groups of women all at once. A host would invite her friends over to her house for a Tupperware party. For the main event, the dealer would demonstrate the life-changing magic of the Wonder Bowl.
And you can imagine this is a forum not just for selling, but actually recruiting other Tupperware women.
"Come to a Tupperware party and see ideas for storing foods and stretching food dollars. Or have a party by July 19th and you may become eligible for this Richmond Cedar ice cream freezer."
It was very feminized, building in gift incentives like winning couture outfits and, you know, earning enough money to send your children to college. It was all couched in terms that mixed sort of Hollywood glamour and being a good mother or being a good wife.
The dealer brought the Wonder Bowls, and the party host was called the Tupperware Lady. If people bought Tupperware at her party, she earned money too.
The whole ethos was based on women helping other women. It bore no relation to the kind of madmen, cutthroat kind of corporate culture that you would read about in the 1950s.
Clark says, of course, Tupperware parties were about profit. To put it in Brownie's own words, the social spirit of a party tends to lower sales resistance. The buying spirit is contagious. But still, many Tupperware ladies told Clark the parties were empowering.
Many women never felt valued. They did housework that nobody noticed. They nurtured children that everyone took for granted. And then when they worked for Tupperware, suddenly people listened to them. They actually had experience of economically managing. They could support their children. It actually transformed their lives.
By 1950, Brownie's Tupperware parties have taken off. Her West Detroit sales team is raking in so much money that people back at Tupperware HQ take notice, including the founder, Earl Tupper.
Tupper was a real Spartan New Englander.
Bob Keeling again.
His boys would talk about helping dad with his experiments and all hours of the night and day, giving this product its flow ability to pour into the molds. And so, you know, he's the guy who gave life to the baby, if you will, but he didn't know how to sell it.
But now, suddenly, Earl's research team is telling him, we're selling like gangbusters in Detroit.
So he sends one of his market research guys out there, takes Brownie out to dinner, and basically puts the question right to him. Just what in the hell are you doing to sell so much product?
Having Tupperware parties, she tells him. It works. The marketing men are impressed. So impressed that they make her an offer. How'd you like to move to Florida? Take over a big chunk of our sales.
And her son Jerry said, you know, at the time it was snowing and cold there in Detroit and just the notion of moving. She's like, oh, let me think about it. Oh, okay.
So Brownie and Jerry load up their stuff and drive 1,400 miles to the Sunshine State, where the days are long and hot and the food spoils quickly. It's not long before Wonder Bowl sales take off there, too. During the holiday rush that first year, Brownie's dealers sell so many so fast that they run out.
Brownie basically says, this is a problem. This is a serious problem.
But she knows how to fix it. She says, let's just pull the bowls off department store shelves. They're not selling there anyways. Let's make Tupperware parties the only way for people to buy the product. Brownie goes up to New York to pitch the idea to Earl Tupper himself. And he agrees.
Tupper kind of tells Brownie, you know, you talk a lot, but when you talk, people tend to listen.
He starts a new division devoted solely to home party sales and puts Brownie in charge. He also takes her on a tour of a Tupperware factory. There, she sees something that stops her in her tracks.
It was like this black sort of slag, this kind of block of dark plastic.
Earl tells her, that's the original polymer material that I experimented with, that I transformed into the first plastic Wonder Bowl.
And she's just amazed by that. I mean, it was just so moving.
What does she find moving about it?
I think she could not help but respect the genius of the man who could look at something like that, what obviously looks like something you would just throw out, and see Tupperware.
Earl tells Brownie, you can keep it. Brownie can't believe her luck. She gives this piece of plastic a name based on its scientific name, polyethylene. She calls her little square of plastic Polly. Brownie takes Polly around on speaking tours and tells people to touch it for good luck. At Tupperware sales training graduations, she has organ music played and she lights candles. One successful distributor says, Tupperware has become a religion with me.
I actually did manage to speak to Brownie Wise on the telephone.
Professor Allison Clark.
And she actually said in this real drawl, you know, Allison, just reach to the stars and you will find your heart's content and dreams. And it was really bizarre. I was this kind of objective historian. And suddenly I was like, oh my goodness, I'd do anything for Brownie Wise. I'd have sold a truckload of Tupperware for Brownie Wise. She was incredibly charismatic.
By the end of 1952, Brownie's distributors place wholesale orders equal to nearly $25 million in today's dollars. It is a record for Earl's business.
In the early memos between the two of them, Tupper's just thrilled. Finally, the product is starting to sell and the sales force is expanding. The money was rolling in, and it's all because of Brownie, at least in his eyes.
Earl writes her a letter,
Many thanks to you, Brownie, for the happiest hours this business has known and for doing the greatest job ever done for me. Earl even has the company buy a house for Brownie and her son Jerry. The next year, 1953, the Tupperware PR team brings Earl a proposal. Let's make Brownie Wise the face of Tupperware. Earl is in.
Long before there was Cher or Madonna, you know, the celebrity of the one name, there was Brownie.
On April 17th, 1954, Brownie appears on the cover of Business Week magazine. She's the first woman ever to do that.
It's not Earl Tupper on the front cover of Business Week. It's Brownie Wise, a woman who has no formal business education.
There's a photo of her holding Polly, that black square of plastic. The caption quotes her saying, "If we build the people, they'll build the business." The article inside talks about the great sales figures, the brilliant motivational techniques, and the woman-driven leadership at Tupperware. It barely mentions the founder, Earl. In fact, it says,
"Nominally, he's the president of the sales company, but actually, Brownie Wise has just about carte blanche to run the organization."
CBS News, Life Magazine, Fortune, they all profile Brownie, call her a business leader, and treat her like a celebrity.
Descriptions of her couture Parisian clothes and her eating habits, that she liked to eat a hamburger before she went to bed and ice cream for breakfast. These things that seem to be absolutely nothing to do with selling products.
Nothing to do with Tupper's amazing Wonder Bowl.
Tupper's fine with it as long as she's putting his product out front. But when he starts to perceive that it's becoming more about her than the product itself, that's where things start to go sour.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
After the big Business Week profile, Earl Tupper isn't the only one who's getting a little suspicious of the Brownie show. Some of Tupperware's distributors, the ones in charge of recruiting and organizing dealers, are wondering why they haven't gotten more recognition. Here's Bob Keeling.
These are people saying, "Hey, Brownie's just out there trotting around doing interviews. We're the ones out here drawing the business. We're the distributors."
In 1955, a small group of top distributors secretly gathers at a hotel in Philadelphia.
Some of them actually tried to stage a revolt and kind of get Brownie out of there.
Wait, why did they want to get rid of Brownie?
Because they were jealous. She was the one getting all of the recognition. She was the one being called the It Girl in Cosmopolitan. And it turned into a lot of really cloak and dagger stuff to figure out who the dissenting distributors were.
At that meeting, they even raised the risky subject of forming a union. What they don't know is that Tupperware management has bugged the room.
I interviewed a guy who wore a hidden microphone and, you know, just crazy stuff like Mission Impossible or something.
The company figures out who's responsible for this rabble-rousing and fires them, shutting down any more talk of a union. So there's turmoil on the inside, But from the outside, things look great for Brownie. She's even started writing a book.
Her own self-help book for women, to just kind of give these homespun sayings that her grandmother used to say.
And a little less of a homespun vibe, she's also bought herself an island in Lake Toho, Florida. She calls it Isla Milagra, Miracle Island.
I'm sure she just loved the idea of owning her own island, you know? And that's kind of where the trouble begins.
Brownie has a flash of inspiration. It's about Tupperware's Jubilee, a lavish party she throws every year to celebrate the company's biggest earners. Here's Allison Clark.
They would get together in these amazingly theatrical Jubilee celebrations in Florida. And they had an entire prop team and sort of theatrical team to set these incredible extravaganzas up. And they would involve like water skiing and skits.
The women would sing Tupperware anthems, songs all of them knew. At one previous Jubilee, top sellers had been given gold shovels and instructed to dig in a field.
People were digging up like diamond rings, and the one lady had a mink stole. And my favorite one is Faye Macalupo from Buffalo, New York, who digs up the model of a car. And they bring in the real car and say, "Here it is, Faye, you win the car."
In 1957, Brownie decides, "I want to host this July's Jubilee at my Miracle Island." The theme is around the world. For the final event, she's going to turn this island in a Florida lake into Hawaii.
She decides she's going to have a luau on her private island for like the top performing Tupperware dealers and managers and distributors, you know, the cream of the cream.
There's just one problem. It's an island. No roads connect it to shore. Brownie's team asks the Coast Guard to basically operate as the party's ferry service. And they're like, we're busy. So instead, Brownie recruits a ragtag team of local boat owners to shuttle 1,200 guests to and from the island. They tell these boat pilots that in exchange for their help, they can attend the evening's gala. Problem solved. So the Jubilee begins. All the guests show up in Florida. Day one happens on the mainland. And for day two, this boat crew shuttles everyone over to Miracle Island. A film crew is there to record.
We enter the Garden Pavilion to start the afternoon of the second day.
There's punch to drink, there's a suckling pig, and it girl Brownie Wise is in the middle of it all. She wears a necklace of orchids and watches her guests enjoy the weird little around-the-world dioramas that she's put up on her island.
Paris in the spring, ooh la la.
It's a meticulously planned show. Nothing has been overlooked. Okay, yeah, one thing has.
If you've ever spent any time in Central Florida in the summer, you know what you can set your watch on late in the afternoon. Storms. They always blow in.
The sun is setting and the storm is picking up.
Okay, now we got to try to get these people off the island in rough seas.
That plan for a calm, organized exit is collapsing into a mad dash. And
some of these boat operators had been drinking,
as have many of the guests who now crowd onto these little boats.
So it's all rocky and it's pitch black.
And then one boat crashes into another, launching a man overboard.
There were boat accidents, people were hurt, ambulances were called.
And in all this mayhem, where is Brownie?
Brownie's nowhere to be found. She saved herself. She finds a way to get her own boat to have a guy take her to safety while people were still trying to get off the island.
Around 20 people end up in the hospital. That man who was thrown into the water has a serious wound to the chest. It's a fiasco for all the real human beings involved, and, of course, a potential PR nightmare for the company. Earl Tupper gets to work putting out the fire.
Tupperware was able to call in a lot of favors they had with the local press to quash what happened in the news. but still the damage was done. Tupper was furious, and he says, look what she did. I mean, she put our whole business at risk with this dim-witted idea of throwing this luau on the island. That was really a breaking point between the two of them.
A few months later, Tupperware and Earl are named in two lawsuits seeking $300,000 in total damages. It is the last straw. Earl calls Brownie to a meeting, but she puts him off. So on New Year's Eve 1957, Earl writes her a letter.
There can be no justification for refusal or unreasonable delay since I'm the president of the corporation. And no business can be conducted unless there is a respect for authority.
Brownie is not pleased. She replies,
this letter is about as friendly as a mad dog. I believe my actions for 6.5 years speak with a louder voice than either your words on paper or mine.
Tupper is having none of it. He calls up two of his top guys to discuss Brownie's fate.
Tupper called this clandestine meeting at the hotel in downtown Orlando, and he basically told these guys, she's done. I'm firing her today.
They convince him it's not a good idea to go that far.
So instead of just pulling the rug out and canning her like he wanted to, they basically forced her to go into this semi-retirement, which was the last thing she wanted to do.
Brownie Wise, architect of Tupperware's sales empire, is out. And she has little to show for it. No formal contract, no retirement fund, no severance pay, nowhere to go.
She didn't have any stock options. She didn't have any golden parachute. She was just inconsolable. She's crying, you know. She said, we got to move out. They didn't even own the house. Tupperware owned their house and kicked them out of that, too.
After all of the profits she's generated for the company, Brownie's reward is a $30,000 settlement. Earl demands that Brownie's contributions be stricken from Tupperware's corporate history. There are some unsold copies of her self-help book still lying around corporate headquarters, and he orders them literally buried.
One little piece of salt in the wound, one more. Yeah, he ordered that there be a big hole dug and that they just all be dumped into it.
Soon after Brownie's exit in 1958, Earl Tupper sells the company for $16 million. Brownie gets nothing. To Allison Clark's mind, part of the reason that Brownie meets this fate is because she's a woman who got too powerful.
I do think that she was penalized for being a successful woman. She made this into a million-dollar company, and her fate was tragic. And I think it is emblematic of the kind of threat of a feminized corporate culture.
Even decades later, employees knew better than to mention Brownie's name in conversation.
When I was there, people literally talked in hushed tones and kind of took me off site to discuss her. Of course, Brownie Wise. It was really strange.
Bob Keeling told us Tupperware wasn't the very last thing that Brownie did. She had a life, she had her son, she had other business pursuits, and she found a creative outlet in pottery. She was pretty good.
Brownie Wise pottery is still very collectible.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. Maybe a handful of people in Florida have a Brownie Wise bowl, but like everyone has a Tupperware.
This is so true. This is so true. And after all, that's her legacy. That is her legacy.
Today, Tupperware leadership does recognize Brownie's contributions. The way she brought so many women into the workforce, brought them up with her. And her impact is all around us. It's probably sitting in your kitchen drawer. Thanks for listening to History This Week. For more moments throughout history that are also worth watching, check your local TV listings to find out what's on the History Channel today. If you want to get in touch, please shoot us an email at our email address, historythisweek@history.com, or you can leave us a voicemail, 212-351-0410. Special thanks to our guests, Allison Clark, design history professor at University of Applied Arts Vienna, and author of Tupperware, The Promise of Plastic in 1950s America. And to Bob Keeling, author of Life of the Party, the remarkable story of how Brownie Wise built and lost a Tupperware party empire. This episode was produced by Julia Press and Chloe Weiner. It was story edited by Jim O'Grady, fact-checked by Barbara Maranzani and Catherine Newhan, and sound designed by Dan Rosato. History This Week is also produced by Corinne Wallace and me, Sally Helm. Our associate producers are Hazel May and Jonah Buchanan. Our senior producer is Ben Dickstein. Our supervising producer is McKamey Lynn, and our executive producer is Jesse Katz. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review History This Week wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Copyright 2023 A&E Television Networks, LLC. All rights reserved.